Drive Time on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Protect your family's future with life cover from Zurich. Talk to a financial broker to find out more.
Most treatments being offered to teenagers with back pain tend to ignore the big picture issues such as sleep, mood, stress and relationships. A new study carried out by researchers at the University of Limerick along with colleagues has shown that new approaches to tackling back pain are not being tested among teenagers. With more of this, we're joined on the line now by co-author of that report, Professor Kieran O'Sullivan from UL. And you're welcome, Kieran, to the programme this evening. Can you tell us a little bit about the study and what you found?
Thanks, Sarah. In terms of the background, we've known for, I suppose, a couple of decades now that back pain should no longer be viewed as a fully physical or structural problem. So while a couple of decades ago we thought it was mostly around posture and how you bend and how you sit and what you can see in an MRI scan, we know now that back pain, when it lasts, is usually due to a mix of factors. So yes, maybe some physical things, but also sleep, activity, mood, and stress. And I guess the positive thing is that we've actually seen now in adults that if we change what we do, where we treat not just the scan, but treat the human as well as the scan, we can not just help back pain, but improve health and well-being. And so we were really interested to see what happens in teenagers. Are these new approaches being tried and are they effective? And I guess the short answer is we can't say, because nobody out there really yet is trying these more kind of person-centered approaches in teenagers with back pain.
Yeah, most people will remember, or perhaps they're still saying to their teenagers about the size of the books and the school bag on their back and them lugging that to and from school, particularly if they're cycling or if they're walking. Is that an issue still, or was that ever really an issue?
It's probably one of those things that we all believed at one point in time, but the evidence tells us that really there's much more important things. So we say, while societally, you know, we still kind of are worried, parents are often worried about, you know, the way a child sits, should they sit so slouched, what about the weight of their school bags? I would say that there are enough things we can be giving out to our children and our teenagers about. We should probably give them a break when it comes to their posture, because really, other than societal expectations or kind of judgments around what's appropriate or attractive, it really isn't a risk factor in back pain. And instead, focus on the stuff that we really know is important. So, for example, next September, almost without fail, there'll be stories about the dangers of heavy school bags, whereas when my kids are going back to school, I'd be less worried about how they sit and how heavy their school bag is, and more around, well, are they physically active in general? What's their sleep like? Their mood like? Have they got friends? Or in contrast, are they being bullied in school? Are they, you know, lacking confidence in themselves or in their body?
So are you saying, Kevin, then that Kieran, that back pain could be, if your teenager is complaining of back pain, it could be linked to them having a bad time in school, as in a bad mental time in school or emotional time in school?
Absolutely. And I guess, look, this is a broader societal thing. So it applies to school kids, but we'll see if we look at our own workplaces as adults, both you and I, if somebody was historically looking at our risk of back pain, they would spend a lot of time looking at our keyboards, our monitors and the chair we sit on. And while that's not lacking in value, your relationship with Cormac and those around you is probably going to be a bigger trigger for risk factor for back pain. And you better not share too much on that front just now.
That explains all the pain I've been having, Kieran.
But there is a real challenge, I guess, in that, like, when I talk about these things with teenagers and parents, there is a real risk that it might be interpreted as me saying the pain is in some way not real or all in their head, when that's not the case at all. We're quite happy in other conditions like high blood pressure that, you know, as well as having factors related to activity and diet, that things like stress in your life are also very real risk factors. And what we're trying to get across here to teenagers and, I suppose, indirectly their parents, is that when a teenager reports back pain, it's very real and there might be some physical contribution to that. But when it lasts a long time, it becomes even more important to not just look at how they bend and how they sit, but really start to look at what's their sleep like, what's their anxiety like, because the pain amongst teenagers when it lasts longer, it's highly comorbid with other things. And instead of, I suppose, seeing the person who has back pain, but also maybe anxiety and worries, they're seen as a person with back pain when they go to the physio or chiropractor, and maybe somebody with tummy allergies when they go to see the nutritionist or somebody else. And we probably need to, I suppose, all get together and look at this person who is having back pain, but typically a range of other problems that are all connected.
So is the way it works then, for example, like if you're being bullied in school or if you're having a really bad time in school, you might be tense as a result of that, which might be causing a physiological problem as a result of the emotional issues that you're having? Or is there an actual physiological problem at all sometimes?
Sure. So you've touched on, I suppose, one of two key mechanisms. So one point is, essentially, if you're anxious or stressed, you're much more likely to sit upright. And that's why, honestly, sitting slouched is not the biggest risk in itself. And if you sit very tense and upright, you can picture how that in itself over time isn't obviously ideal and very relaxing. But related to that, if you are distressed, it tends to affect your sleep, which leads to kind of low levels of inflammation, and that causes a whole series of other things. So they're all kind of connected in their own way. And that's why, again, while exercise isn't the answer for everything, even simple things like exercise helps our sleep, helps our anxiety levels, helps low levels of inflammation. And what we've got to probably try and do is go away from associating exercise with just making muscles stronger or making people sit up straight, but instead looking at exercise, especially if it's enjoyable and socially engaging, that it helps a range of these things, such as mood, social engagements, fun, all that kind of stuff.
I think Cormac has a question. Do you have a question, Cormac?
Well, I do. I'm thinking back to a book I read by Jon Kabat-Zinn about meditation and mindfulness and chronic pain. And I just wonder, in this context with teenagers, would meditation reduce back pain?
Sure. So we can answer that in two parts. First of all, we know meditation and mindfulness can have a small effect on people with pain, including teenagers. So there's nothing wrong with that. What's often challenging about taking those approaches is we often use the meditation or mindfulness or other forms of relaxation or even exercise as the short-term crutch to help us cope with the distress. But sometimes then we have to think about, well, how did I end up in this situation and can I plan around that? Mm. So, for example, there'll be times related to work where I might need to go for a walk or do some meditation or mindfulness to calm down my stress. But actually, a bigger part of that is also almost, if it's a teenager, how am I planning my study and my other activities? Or if it's a parent with back pain, how am I managing the work, the childcare, the homework and all those other things? So in other words, the meditation mindfulness, there's nothing at all wrong with that. There's a reason it helps. But again, I suppose there's a risk that if we see those things only as solutions, a long-term solution, they tend to be, I suppose, an opportunity to recognize that there's a connection there. But then we probably have to take a step back and say, right, what else is going on in my life?
Yeah. So,
again,
sorry, kids, you have to exercise. It's basically
so they said it's part of it, but we equally don't want to turn that into a form of punishment. And so, for example, picking a form of activity that is enjoyable and for them seems safe. So, for example, physical education is a great part of the curriculum, but we need to make sure that that's not associated with body shaming or any sense of a lack of confidence about being active. And again, some people will find that very easy, but for others, we might need to find safe, gentle ways to get them started.
Really interesting to speak to you, Kieran, and I'm sure there's lots of parents out there as well, and adults indeed, because this is not just for teenagers, who might learn something from that in terms of a holistic approach as opposed to, you know, reaching for the Nurofen, which is okay too as well, if you really need it. But thank you very much for joining us. That's Professor Kieran O'Sullivan from University of Limerick.